Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 3rd of October. Glad you are listening as we start our day together. We'll be talking about the relevant news items, special interest topics with guests from around our country. There is certainly each day, it seems, lots to get to in the news. And so when we get into these topics, we'll do it with real faith and with genuine hope. And if you listen to the show regularly, you know that we celebrate each day that Jesus's tomb is empty. And so our allegiance is not going to be to the Republican or to the Democratic Party. Our allegiance is to the only king of an eternal kingdom that knows no end. So our guests that come on the program, they may have some different angles, some perhaps more conservative, some perhaps more liberal, but all of them will be anchored in the same Christian faith. And that's what we look to sort of have some sane and some helpful and encouraging conversations, not the breathless and slanted news that we so often see. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner. Grateful to be joined in studio. You know the names, Logan Rausch and Paul Perreault, who produce the show, keep the sound running and the news flowing. I really do love working with the two of them each morning. And of course, I love hearing from you. If you listen regularly, you know that I really appreciate the times where you call into the show or possibly text the studio. And you can do that at any point in the morning if you want to be a part of what happens here with our guests and you have some comments or opinions. Certainly, you can call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Well, as I mentioned, there is lots to get to today. It feels like I could say that every morning these days. I sort of wake up and even cringe a little bit when I check the news to see if there's anything that happened overnight. But I am appreciative of the kind of guests we do have on the show. I know up first, we're going to have Harvest Prude from World Magazine. She's joining us and will be covering the news out of Washington, D.C. She's actually been in the hearing rooms where the Supreme Court proceedings have been taking place these last couple of weeks, and she gives us an insider look at the confirmation process. And we're going to talk specifically about the implications we can anticipate from here, both the vote that is likely upcoming on Judge Kavanaugh, as well as what that might mean for the 2018 midterms in November. So Harvest would be a great insider. So she also recently wrote an article discussing the regulation of tech giants like Google and Twitter and Facebook and whether we're going to see some, at least some oversight from the government on these tech companies and whether we really should do that. So great perspective from Harvest coming up first. And then in the second half of this hour, our regular Wednesday guest will be joining us, Kent Kaiser, and we'll talk about the midterms as well coming up. Do we see a Democratic blue wave sort of taking over the Congress? Is this going to be a Republican-oriented Congress for the next 2 years? What does Ken think about that? He's worked on campaigns for a number of years in his life and gives us a good idea of what to expect. But before we get to Harvest and Kent and the news, we have a quote this week that we've been reading each morning from N.T. Wright, the theologian out of Scotland, who talks with us as believers about the fact that we can have hope in the midst of the darkness in this world. And actually, we do have a calling as we are walking out life in this world. And Wright says this, that sometimes when we're left to ourselves, we may end up with the general belief that things are getting worse and there's nothing much we can do about it. But we're wrong. Our task in the present is to live as resurrection people, for we are in between Easter and that final day. So our Christian life, corporate and individual, worship and in mission, is a sign of the Easter that has been, and it is a foretaste of the world that is to come. So if you are following Jesus this morning, listening all throughout our country, throughout the Midwest, through some of our affiliates, remember that we are citizens of heaven. And I'm guessing many of you are getting up, going to work, grabbing your coffee, trying to drag your kids out of bed, maybe getting out some of the crossword puzzles for the morning, and not really certain about the day ahead, just given all of the troubling headlines. Just know that we serve the King of an eternal kingdom, and we really can shine his light in the world, as difficult as it may be. We're called to do that. There's no other hope. So with that, we're going to be excited after break to bring Harvest Prude into our time together here as we talk about news from an insider perspective in Washington, D.C. Welcome again to Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we are joined on Skype by Harvest Prude, who's a reporter for World Magazine and is doing a lot of coverage out of Washington, D.C. Delighted to have her on the program. Good morning, Harvest.
Good morning. So good to be here.
So I'd be curious, as you sort of wake up and do your day in Washington, D.C., I know sometimes I've traveled overseas to places like Israel, and in these places, you can almost feel the tension in the atmosphere. You can feel an energy, a buzz in the atmosphere. Is it like that in Washington, D.C. when you get up in the morning these days with all of what's happening and the rancor going back and forth?
Yeah, that I would say that's very accurate. There is kind of a buzz, and you know, I think if you've seen the news, it's not just in Washington. Everyone, you know, in all of these states have been watching the hearings from home, watching on CNET. You know, you've heard reports of college students and older people. Just everyone's kind of watching this very closely. And so because of that, that does give everyone a common talking point. So there is that buzz.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because as you've covered the news, you've probably seen this, that news has become very individualized. People just can shape their own feeds. They can determine where they want to hear it from. And so we don't necessarily rally as a country around any given news. But what I'm hearing and what you're suggesting is that in pretty much all circles these days, that people are really paying attention to these confirmation proceedings.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of times people are very divided on what coverage they're getting. And that's still the case with this, but because a lot of people are watching the hearing, you know, have been watching the hearing for themselves, they've been watching the testimony for themselves, instead of just reading articles about it from various viewpoints, I think that does give people a lot more confidence in talking about the hearing and what they think and kind of having their own opinions and feeling very informed.
Mm. Well, and when we chatted last week, we were sort of on the tail end of the proceedings, the hearings. It was pretty riveting testimony from both sides. Sort of wondered what the next steps might be. And it wasn't more than a few hours later that we saw the senator from Arizona, Jeff Flake, sort of get confronted in the Senate elevators by two protesters mm-hmm. who were suggesting that he really should be paying more attention, screaming, actually, he should be paying more attention to women who have been sexually abused. It was a riveting moment. And not long after that, we saw that the senator changed his point of view. And he said, we really should have an FBI investigation. What was your take as these things were unfolding in these moments? Was this a honest attempt by the Republicans to do an investigation? Did he really change his mind in these moments? Was he giving coverage maybe to other senators who were on the fence? Help us walk through this whole situation, Harvest.
Yeah, that certainly was a very interesting situation. And there were signs that Flake might have been changing his mind even in the hearing. He pulled aside a couple senators and went to a back room to kind of start talking. And everyone was like, oh, what's happening? And so one of those senators was Chris Coons from Delaware. And after the hearing, after Flake's announcement, Chris Coons came in and he talked to the press a little bit about what had just happened. And I was actually there when he talked to us. And he said, you know, Flake, among others, had just been very concerned about sort of the partisan rancor that not just the senators had experienced, but that everyone had been watching. And he said that Flake was very concerned that because the display that everyone had seen, people would be losing faith in the ability of Congress to function the way it's supposed to. And so he saw it not just as a, you know, a last minute attempt, but also as an attempt to kind of make a bipartisan move in what had been a very, you know, bitter partisan battle. And obviously, you know, some of that's informed by his point of view, but I do think he hit on something important, which is that, yes, it was a very last minute move, but at the same time, Flake did his best, I think, to, kind of do what he could for both. Like he did vote for his party. He did, confirm Kavanaugh and, stand by his, you know, earlier statements, but at the same time, he just asked for something that kind of had been a big deal in the hearing, which was the FBI investigation. And so now that the FBI investigation is happening, people can no longer point to that as, you know, the Republicans are not doing their due diligence. if that makes sense.
It really does. And I think that's part of what is going to be helpful to some of the Republican senators to make a decision that maybe are on the fence. And you bring up the point about Flake. It's helpful to hear your perspective firsthand, that there really did seem to be some agonizing, that he really was on the fence, because I think we can get pretty cynical and skeptical that any decision being made by any politician is for political gain. But in this case, Senator Flake is not running for re-election. And so it does maybe give some authenticity to his honest wrestling through this issue.
Right. Exactly. And obviously, I don't know what was going on in his head, and I really can't say either way. But just kind of the whole way it went down, the fact that, he did earn that respect, I think, across the aisle as well. But the fact that he also did vote yes, like he said he would, it kind of gives, like you said, more authenticity to his decision.
Well, it sure looks like coming up even as soon as today, there has been talk that they're going to wrap up the FBI investigation. And it sure doesn't sound like that the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is interested in making any further steps in between now and a vote. He talked about moving the goalposts recently.
Democrats may be trying to move the goalposts every 5 minutes, but their goal has not moved an inch.
So what McConnell is suggesting, Harvest, is that he's not going to open it up for further investigation. It was going to be very limited in scope because he's a little cynical about the Democratic motive here. Do we see a vote coming up potentially as soon as this weekend on Justice Kavanaugh?
Yes. McConnell has been very firm in that he does still want to schedule a vote this week. So assuming the FBI wraps its investigation up, and I've heard reports that it could wrap up by today even, or maybe by tomorrow, we'll probably have a procedural vote Friday and then a final vote Sunday. So it's looking like, unless there are some bombshells dropped once the senators see the report, it's looking like the nomination vote at least is still on track.
And have you seen anything of significance coming from the last 4, 5, 6 days of the FBI investigation? I heard something about maybe Kavanaugh throwing ice on somebody in a bar as a college student. I've seen some things around perhaps Christine Blasey Ford helping coach other people in a polygraph test. Is there anything really that we should be paying mm-hmm. attention to that might derail this?
Yeah, that's at this point, I mean, none of us are really surprised, right, that like a lot of things, posturing, accusations, et cetera, have been coming out in the meantime. Like once we knew the vote was going to be delayed a week, we knew that would happen. But the senators, both Senator Feinstein and I think Senator Grassley have said that the contents of the investigation are going to be kept just to the senators and their aides. That way, both people feel comfortable talking to investigators and that, you know, it doesn't set a bad precedent for what people have access to. So at this point, it really, unless there's something in there that shocks, you know, all of these experienced, like, politicians and senators, I don't know that anything will derail the investigation, unless there's corroborating evidence. You know, that's the only thing I can think of.
It's Harvest Prud of World Magazine, and we're talking through some of the unfolding events in Washington, D.C. relative to the Supreme Court nomination of Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Harvest, when we come back, I would love to change our topic to the idea of regulating social media. I know that you have recently released an article on this about what's been coming out this last week with Jeff Sessions potentially suggesting that Google and Facebook and Twitter might need some more monitoring. So I'd love your take on that next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 21 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and we're joined by Harvest Prud from World Magazine talking about some of the headlines coming out of Washington, D.C. Love the dialogue with you, Harvest, just an insider perspective on this. And you recently covered some of the potential regulations that might be coming to our tech giants like Facebook and Google and Twitter. I'd love your take on what happened, some of the headlines coming out of Google a couple weeks ago, where it was at least suggested internally that they could change the algorithms a bit in the election time to be more sympathetic towards immigration, and that the kinds of things that show up on our Google feed maybe get shaped by Google. It's not free of bias. I'd love your take on that.
Yeah, so the two headlines that started to reveal what goes on internally with Google are, one, there were some leaked emails showing that employees discussed, you know, how they could counter sort of like Islamophobic algorithm systemically biased search results. And they floated this idea back when, you know, President Donald Trump released what's been called the Muslim travel ban in January. However, there was an executive who pushed back on that idea in the email chain and said, you know, this is a highly political issue, so we need to remain fair and balanced and present facts. And a spokeswoman later said, you know, those ideas weren't implemented. However, it did kind of show that employees at these big, you know, tech companies do occasionally have conversations that are very political and that are very, you know, shaped by their worldview. And so far, you know, they've said, oh, we haven't done anything with these ideas, but, you know, it has sort of resulted in a suspicion surrounding that. And then another headline is that the news website Breitbart released a leaked 2016 video after the presidential election of Google executives bemoaning the results of the election during a staff meeting. So they were very upset. They said all kinds of things to that effect, which again just kind of confirmed, oh, there's a certain political bias, a certain political leaning, you know, at this big tech company. After the video was leaked, Google said, oh, you know, those comments only represented personal views. They weren't trying to speak for the company. So this does show that Silicon Valley companies can't pretend to be ideological neutral, which does bring up the question you were saying, well, can their algorithms be neutral? So far, you know, they've insisted, yes, they can be. And when they do mess up or when things like this are revealed, they take action to either fix mess ups or to reassure us, oh, this was never implemented. But like you said, the mess up does give people a reason to keep an eye out and just be aware of this. And they also bring the matter to national and public attention.
So I'd be curious your thoughts in terms of the regulation part of it, too, because I know even as recently as last night, our bathtub water spout had broken, and I just had to Google a bit about how to get a replacement bathtub spout. And I know, Harvest, when I go on Google today, I'm going to have all kinds of sort of bathtub and bathtub repair and everything showing up in my feed all over. So we do know that we're tracked. We do know that what we look for shows up. So do we need some regulation just in general of some of the tech giants? Because they really do have information that then they use in our feeds.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's obviously speculative at this point, but I think it's likely that the conversation, you know, you have seen with Facebook, with Twitter, with Google, that Congress has started to call these big tech figures to give testimony and to kind of explain themselves when there are these mess ups, like with the recent Facebook hack or, you know, when user data is compromised and our privacy is compromised. And Mark Zuckerberg himself, the CEO of Facebook, has already said, like, he would not be surprised and he thinks it's likely that regulation is going to happen at some point. He sees it as inevitable, but he said, you know, lawmakers should be careful about what regulation you put in place. And I tend to agree that there does need to be a balance between, you know, these businesses who do have a right to operate in the manner they want to, unless they're violating, you know, specific regulation, but also protecting our privacy and protecting our right of conscience, like those kinds of things. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what lawmakers do to sort of keep that balance in mind. And I think we're going to see a continuing conversation about these things as we go forward and as more incidents like this happen.
Yeah, certainly as a mode of communication that's not going anywhere. We have just about a minute left, Harvest, and I would love to just have you educate our listeners on what shadow banning might be on Twitter. I'm not even sure I know myself what this is.
Right. So, yes, Vice News reported in July that Twitter had limited the visibility of several prominent Republicans, lawmakers, and conservative voices. And they termed it shadow banning. So what this is that when it basically just means that these people's tweets and their profile won't come up unless you search for their name directly. So that makes it a lot more hard to just, you know, find them or if you type in like a topic that they're passionate about, other voices would come up, but theirs wouldn't. So Twitter fixed the bug a day later and they said it was an algorithm problem. Shadow banning can happen if a lot of people like find someone's views offensive and they report you a lot. And then, you know, Twitter may just think, oh, like that's, without really looking into it, they may think, oh, okay, this is like a troll or something, and just ban you. So that's what shadow banning is. We've seen some of that on Facebook as well. Tech companies have so far been very responsive to fixing it and saying, oh, well, it's not just a targeting conservatives thing. But we have seen that happen. Yes.
Well, Harvest, if you could send me some simple steps about how to shadow ban Logan Rausch, my producer, for my Twitter feed here later this morning, I would really appreciate that. Sounds like you have the expertise to do just that.
Well, I'll see what I can do.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Love that you give us an insider perspective out of Washington, D.C., and look forward to the next time we have a chance to talk.
Thanks so much for having me.
We'll take a break here for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News, and when we come back for the second half of this hour, Kent Kaiser will join us in studio, and we'll continue to have dialogue about some of these events coming out of Washington, D.C. So more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, to our friends listening in Iowa this morning, as if you haven't had enough water falling from the sky over this last season, people in eastern Iowa might get as well used to these rainy days ongoing. You could see in Waterloo, Cedar Rapids, and Iowa City another 4 to 5 inches of rain between now and next Tuesday. But it's even a better forecast compared to some parts of western Iowa that could see more than 6 inches of rain. So if you have sightings of 2 giraffes or 2 alligators or 2 elephants walking by, please go ahead and text the studio and let me know that we might have a second Noah's Ark. Well, I see Ken Kaiser is in studio with us, and we're going to talk about the elections coming up in the 2018 midterm cycle. And I'm sure we'll get into some of the speeches that our president has been giving these last few days as he's been on the stump. So lots to come with Ken Kaiser on Faith Radio Mornings. Yesterday, Dr. Ann Bradley of the Institute of Faith, Work, and Economics joined the show, and she was talking with us about the importance of maintaining capitalism in our country. Maybe we can reform it, but we don't want to do away with it.
Our critiques that Christians bring, and that's what our book is about, that Christians are bringing to capitalism, I think they're real. Does it call us to be more materialistic? Do we just want to consume things? Do we stop loving our neighbor? I mean, those are questions that real, earnest Christians have, and we try to tackle them in the book in an earnest way, not just to be apologists for capitalism, but to say, okay, given the fact that we're broken and we're sinful, what's the system that is going to best help us look at the, you know, kind of keep our eyes on the prize, which is human flourishing, and helping to lift people out of poverty, because we certainly know we have a biblical mandate to do that.
Anne was very articulate yesterday, kind of carving out a middle way in these economic conversations where we can recognize that capitalism might need some reform, but to swing the pendulum all the way over to socialism like many are trying to do in some of our political arena isn't always the best option either. So it's a great book she released. We'll have her on the program again soon to talk through all of those critiques. If you want to catch that entire segment, you can head to myfaithradio.com and search for Anne Bradley, and you can catch the 10 minutes of conversation we had. Well, I'm looking across the studio at Dr. Kent Kaiser, who's the chair of the Communications Department here at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. And I'm going to ask Kent first, why, as somebody who's been on the inside of political campaigns, why he can't get the president or the vice president to join me in studio. He's got to use his weight, his poll, and his name to get these big names. So Kent Kaiser next here on Faith Radio Mornings.
When cultures fail to follow God's directive for the family, predictable problems are inevitable. This is Jim Garlow. The Bible is clear that sexual activity for every culture and ethnicity is to be confined to a lifelong marriage between a man and a woman. Any sexual activity outside of that arrangement is wrong, whether premarital, extramarital, or homosexuality. Government won't fix marriage, reduce single-parent homes, raise educational scores, halt gang violence, or end poverty. But personal behavior decisions based upon biblical principles, especially related to strong marriages and biblical sexuality, will. And the family, headed by a father and a mother, is the greatest unit in existence for truth and biblical values to be successfully passed down from generation to generation. It's the primary spiritual unit for establishing a deep and lasting love for Jesus and the Bible. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
And those are the bagpipes, of course, of Dr. Kent Kaiser, who joins us regularly on Wednesdays on Faith Radio Mornings to talk through political issues and maybe economic issues, any of the headlines going on in our country. Good morning, Kent.
Good morning.
So I know the president is coming to Minnesota, to Rochester here soon. I know the vice president is making his way around these states. Lots of swing states these days in the Midwest, it seems like. You've been involved in political campaigns for a number of years. Why can't you get these big names in studio to join me and you, Kent? We can have the president sitting right next to us right now.
You're dreaming.
Pretty short answer to that question. Yeah. I think that's fair. Well, I would love your take. Obviously, I know you follow the political cycle pretty closely. Where are we at? We're about 5 weeks away from the 2018 midterms. And what do we see in terms of the momentum for either party at this point?
I don't know if there's really momentum either way. It's kind of weird. I think this is one of those elections where things will break at the last minute. I think for predicting today, I would say that the Democrats are going to take the U.S. House, and I think they have a chance of taking the U.S. Senate. You know, I think they've been probably energized by these hearings with Judge Kavanaugh, unfortunately. I think at this point, the Republicans are kind of in a lose-lose situation with Kavanaugh, unfortunately. It's gotten to the point where if they have a vote, he could get voted down, which is kind of a loss for them. And if he's confirmed, then we've got somebody put on the Supreme Court, which is all fine, but kind of tainted at this point. And I think the Republicans might suffer electorally because of what the Democrats have done to Judge Kavanaugh. I think that, you know, if the Republicans put him on the Supreme Court, then the Democrats are going to have a campaign issue in saying that, look, the Republicans don't care about women. And so, unfortunately, I think we're in a lose-lose situation. Now, I think they could, in a sense, cut their losses if in fact, he were voted down and then the president could come back and nominate somebody else. And a lot of people are kind of in I told you so mode here and saying he should have nominated Amy Coney Barrett to begin with, because as a woman, she would probably not be subjected to the same kinds of claims that Kavanaugh has been in terms of sexual harassment and stuff. And she's probably more, I don't know, attractive to a certain voting bloc, like women and so on. And so even though she's super conservative, which so is he, I think she might have an easier – she would have had an easier time. She'd probably be already on the Supreme Court. I mean, They started their session this week, and she'd probably be sitting there with them at this point, unlike him.
You mentioned that Judge Kavanaugh is quite conservative, but typically speaking, in past confirmation proceedings, the judges try the best they can to evade any kind of political statement, any kind of middle, other than middle of the road. They try to stay out of that. But we saw some pretty strong partisan statements that Judge Kavanaugh opened with last week, where he attacked the Democratic Party for a conspiracy, for trying to smear him. Do you remember another time in history where we saw a judge really come out and reveal some of their leanings in terms of their politics?
Not so much. I think that when Robert Bork was borked, now we call it, I think that there was some of that kind of talk going around. I think that we're in a different kind of a situation right now, in as much as the president and the senator of the same party. And so the president and this president has decided to really go against what's happened in the past, in the sense that in the past, presidents would look for somebody who had no paper trail. In other words, somebody who you really couldn't figure out what their politics were, or where they would stand on issues. And with this president, that's all flipped on its head, really. You know, it used to be that a potential nominee list would come up, and then it would circulate through all these different committees and through this and that politician in Washington. And it was really death by committee, because one name after another would come off of the list until you wound up with a few names who nobody really knew much about, and there wasn't really much paper trail. And that's just the opposite of what President Trump has been doing. He's been going for the most conservative judges to be on his list of potential Supreme Court and federal court judges. And so so that part of it's really kind of different. So I think that, you know, it's like the curtain has been pulled back, you know, in a way like it hasn't been before. So these potential nominees' views are out there, and not hidden like they have been in the past. And personally, I think that's a good thing, because in the past it seemed like it was all this little song and dance to try and cover up what somebody believed. And it got some presidents in trouble, honestly. I mean, they wound up with nominees who turned out to be different than they expected on the court. I mean, I remember when the first President Bush nominated Justice Souter, I mean, we kind of thought, okay, that must be a conservative because it's a conservative president. Well, then he turned out to be a liberal member of the court. And he's only one of several examples like that. It's oddly enough, it always seems like it's the Republicans who wind up with somebody whose views aren't what they expected. I can't think of a time when a Democrat nominated somebody who turned out to be a conservative.
Well, and to your point, to at least have it transparent and out there, I mean, I think you can just look at the voting records of the justices and have a pretty good idea that they make some decisions even before the case might be done about how they're going to vote. It's always seems like 5-4, at least in recent history. The now retired Justice Kennedy was a swing vote back and forth. But even the idea that there was a swing vote meant that there was 4 on one side and 4 on the other.
Right. It didn't take long for people to recognize where people would where the justices would land on issues. It takes one term and they understand that this is a liberal or a conservative or swing justice. Yeah.
Well, it certainly is one of those situations right now that is going to probably define the upcoming midterms about how this goes out. Should the Democrats maybe be a little bit careful what they wish for in terms of if they do gain power in the House and the Senate and thus are thwarting the president's agenda over the next 2 years? The economy is going pretty well. We have new trade agreements. It seems like there's a lot of positivity in the country. And you could at least see a scenario where if they obstruct over the next 2 years, everybody's going to vote back in the president because they do feel pretty good about the economy. If that went south, he would have a pretty powerful message to blame the Democrats for that.
Yeah, this whole scenario really does set up the president pretty well for re-election, I think. I think there's a lot going on that is good for the president. I don't know. It's different. See, this president is so different because he's not so closely tied to the party. He's out there certainly stumping for candidates, and like you mentioned, he'll be in Minnesota tomorrow. And he's moving around from state to state, holding rallies and so on. But it seems to me that oftentimes these rallies, while they do raise money for the National Republican Congressional Committee, they are more about Trump. And it's more about his reelection and keeping his name out there and keeping his supporters motivated. I mean, I bet you if you went to the rally tomorrow that's taking place in Rochester, Minnesota, you would see a lot of people there who are typically not very political. They're probably people who maybe even vote Democrat sometimes, but they're Trump supporters. And the fact that he's there for a Republican candidate or two who is running in our state, you know, that's really secondary to most of these people who are showing up at the Trump rally. They just want to see their president.
Yeah, it's fascinating to watch. And boy, these next 5 weeks are going to be interesting. Ken, when we come back from break, I would love to get your take on some comments that Hillary Clinton made again last night, where she seems to be doubling down on her 2016 campaign message. And it doesn't seem like the Democratic Party is too happy about that. So we'll talk about some more of these election cycles coming up with Dr. Kent Kaiser here on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 10 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and I'm joined by Dr. Ken Kaiser. We've been talking about the political scene, and Kent really does have an insider perspective. You were saying during break, Kent, that you once rode in the presidential motorcade of George, was it H.W. Bush?
No, George W. Bush. I actually drove.
Like, you drove?
I was in the I was 2 cars back from the president, his vehicle. So, yeah, it's fun. I mean, I don't know if they still do this. I suspect they do. They get volunteers or whatever and vet them and have them drive. It was a long day, and you don't get to get out to go to the bathroom, you know, so you don't want to, like, drink too much water or something. But yeah, it was fun because we got to drive, you know, 90 miles an hour up the freeways and through the Twin Cities and 40 miles an hour down the city streets of Minneapolis, and all the streets are cleared. It's just classic, like what you see on TV, where the one side of the freeway is completely stopped and you just flying along through an empty freeway during the middle of the day. And yeah, it was great.
Well, I would imagine that there's quite a background check associated with that. Did they find that you were throwing ice on people in college or anything like that?
Yeah, no, I was not. No, I'm not like Kavanaugh. it's funny because then, you know, you get this little briefing from the Secret Service and everything, and you never have any contact with the president. You see him, of course, because he's 2 cars ahead of you and he's getting in and out, but it's not like you get to have contact with him in that context. The way that you get contact is if you actually volunteer for a campaign, which is I did that at a different time with George W. Bush, and then I was in a photo line and got a baseball signed by him and things like that. But
well,
yeah,
and you being involved in campaigns, I'm sure you've seen a lot of political messaging, especially in your role in communications too. And last night, Hillary Clinton once again emerged. We're almost 2 years after the last election, and she really did double down, making comments that there's a certain segment of our country that appreciates the president as a racist, a sexist, an Islamophobe, all of these epithets thrown again at the president. Doesn't seem to be a helpful time for the Democrats to have her reemerge and say these things that got them into such trouble 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, once again, she's out there with her basket of deplorables comments and not recognizing who the American people are and what their belief system is. And she just comes from this, you know, East Coast, I think we'll call it New York political scene. And so she doesn't even understand. It's really strange to me because, you know, she originally was a college Republican, like when she was in college, and she's from Illinois. And then she obviously lived in Arkansas while she was, you know, First Lady of Arkansas under Bill Clinton, and she just seems to have lost any kind of values of the heartland, which just, yeah, it's just shocking. And she keeps on making these comments about people. It's sort of like when Obama made the comments about people clinging to their Bibles and their guns. It's really along the same line. And it's really, the thing is, it's like a code word. You know, they talk about what we call dog whistles, which is something that only the insiders can hear. Well, when Hillary Clinton's out there using these terms and talking about using all these epithets, what the average voter is hearing is like, hey, that's me, that's my values. And I think she just doesn't quite get that. And yeah, I mean, people often talk about that with Republicans using these dog whistle terms, but the Democrats do it way more. And they don't realize it. That's the crazy thing. They're blowing these dog whistles all the time and accusing people of things and attacking middle America values and don't seem to even get it. It's just nuts.
Well, and I think that's a very fair point to make, is that you can have a critique of the president that he has been quite divisive at times with his Twitter feeds and some of the comments that he's made. But to suggest that then the party of the Democrats is this great uniting party that's for all people, when you look at the identity politics statements that they make, they are constantly fracturing groups of people in our country. It's as divisive as anything we'd see on either side.
No, it's really something that brings together people on the right. And it always has been. That's the thing. It's like people who are kind of in the middle and on the right have always been opposed to these like aggressive affirmative action and stuff. And that's kind of what this is. It's dividing people, and it's suggesting that certain people should be given a position in our government and in our society that would be higher than others. And the others is the average middle American voter. And again, I think that the Democrats don't even realize how offensive they are, but we hear it. You know, we're out here, and when she calls people deplorables, or when she assails people for their values, I mean, and tries to call people Islamophobic, you know, people are going to, well, people will say, well, I'm not Islamophobic, but I certainly want secure borders, and I don't want terrorists coming into our country. Well, you know, that's what we're hearing out here is the practical implications of these epithets that are being thrown at us. And of course, there's backlash to that. So that's part of why she didn't win 2 years ago, and part of why she's harming Democratic candidates today by going out there and continuing to spew this kind of rhetoric.
Well, it's going to be really interesting to watch in 5 weeks when people go to the polls again. Kent, we have a couple minutes left here. I'd love to shift the conversation to some of the free trade agreements that came out this week between the United States and Canada and Mexico. And I think one thing we can fairly say about the president, whether you agree or disagree with his policies, he signals what his policies are going to be, and he stays with that. And it's the first time in living memory for me and following politics that I feel like if a president says something, they're actually going to do what they say. That gives people like me good planning tips for my business, and it's just helpful to know that even if I disagree with it, it's helpful to know that the message is the message.
Yeah, he does more than signal. He states pretty explicitly what he wants to do. Yeah, and these free trade agreements, we just got this new free trade agreement, which is a great deal for the United States compared to NAFTA, this new deal with Mexico and Canada. And Canada dragged their feet all along, you know, and lo and behold, they come to the table, you know, and it's going to be good for dairy farmers in the United States, for example. It's going to be good for auto workers in the United States. It's good for a lot of parts of the economy of the United States, this new trade deal. And, you know, people on the other side of the political spectrum are just assailing the president for blowing up these relationships that we have with these close allies like Canada. But lo and behold, here we are. Now we have this new agreement that is going to be a boon to the United States. And, yeah, like you said, the president's doing what he said he was going to do. And this bellicose rhetoric that he uses and so on works in this negotiation. And people just aren't accustomed to this kind of a, you know, big businessman coming along and using private sector business tactics in the political realm. And here it is. It's working. It's great.
Well, he certainly knows how to use leverage to get things done, and his willingness to walk away from the table really does sort of prompt the issue. Well, I appreciate you joining us as you do every Wednesday like this, Kent. I know lots coming up and looking forward to joining us over these next 5 weeks and helping us see and think through and evaluate what's happening in the election cycle. So take a break here on Faith Radio Mornings, and we'll wrap up our first hour of our show. Tell you what, those conversations go pretty quick with people like Kent Kaiser and Harviz Prude. Really appreciate the kind of people our producers, Logan Rausch, Rachel Sutton, Paul Perot, bring into studio to help us think through these issues of the day. And hopefully we'll do it from a balanced perspective. Again, people will lean either direction politically, but they try to enter into these conversations from a balanced perspective. Well, we got a great second hour of the show coming up as well. We'll be joined by Karen Swallow Pryor, who will talk with us about how the church can respond as part of this Me Too movement.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.